Well, hello, hello, and welcome to Think Business Futures. This week, we're taking on the biggest news story in the country. The gates have been opened across the ditch, and the New Zealand-Australian travel bubble, an idea first floated in April of last year, is finally upon us. And with Australian tourists comprising 40% of the Kiwis' annual tourism intake, the goodwill gesture serves as a much-needed jab in the arm for cross-Tasman tourism industries. But for a program that has seen Prime Ministers trade barbs over COVID-19 management, the announcement today is tentative. New Zealanders have been allowed into Australia without needing to quarantine since October of last year, but now that same offer is being extended to Australians in New Zealand, barring, of course, another outbreak of community transmission. Joining me today to help burst the bubble is Senior Lecturer in the Management Discipline Group at the University of Technology Sydney's Business School, Chair of the Council of Australasian Tourism and Hospitality Educators, and a member of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade's Consular Consultative Group, Dr. David Bierman. So, Doctor, to start off, it's been a while since we first heard rumblings of a bubble in April of last year, straight out of the Easter long weekend and into a very big announcement.
Well, effectively from the 19th of April, Australians will be able to travel to New Zealand quarantine-free, subject to a number of conditions. Everything in New Zealand is very conditional. But basically what's happened is that earlier this month, late March, the Australian government firstly suspended the ban on international travel in relation to New Zealand, and so far only to New Zealand. So that was the first step, and that already happened. Today, Jacinda Ardern announced that the travel bubble will actually be operating from midnight on the 18th, which is really basically the 19th of April, which is great, and that Australians will be able to travel pretty much anywhere in New Zealand. There will be an expectation that they have had a test a little time before they've gone. So there are, you know, a few strings attached to it. But, from the travel industry's point of view, this is a very big breakthrough for both Australia and New Zealand. For New Zealand in particular, it's going to be very important because of the fact that Australia represents 40% of New Zealand's inbound tourism in a normal year. So our 1.5 million Australian tourists inject around about $2.7 billion into the New Zealand economy. And we're a very big part of their tourism industry. Conversely, New Zealand's a very important market for Australia, and I guess also too with the absence of a Chinese market coming back to the way it was pre-coronavirus, New Zealand will certainly be the dominant international market for a while. I mean, pre-COVID, it represented around about one-sixth of all international visitors to Australia. So it's always been an important market here. And Kiwis tend to stay a long time. So to actually have a beginning of a sense of normality returning is good. I guess one thing with New Zealand in particular is, and they have a lot in common with Queensland and Western Australia, is they're very titchy about travel and about any outbreaks of COVID, and they tend to get a little bit panicky as soon as you get one or two cases. So I don't just assume that this is going to be a huge recovery that we can sit back and relax and say, isn't that wonderful? I think we should probably approach it with cautious optimism.
And you've been quite intimately involved, or at least involved in some degree for quite a while, with the actual process of opening up the travel bubble with New Zealand and obviously sort of banging out those parameters of what this would actually entail. And obviously there's been a huge amount of talk about this since about April of last year, when the idea was first floated. And since then, as you've already mentioned, there does seem to be sort of that same twitchiness that we see in Queensland Queensland with Premier Palaszczuk, and then McGowan over in Western Australia.
It worked a treat for him. I mean, he had the biggest landslide in Western Australian political history. So. Mm.
But just for the audience, can you give us a brief understanding of how you've been involved and what you have seen over the last few months and watching this process sort of, in a way, behind the scenes come to fruition?
Yeah. Well, I've worked a fair bit with Tourism Australia. One of my former students actually is now in charge of risk and crisis and recovery at Tourism Australia. And when she took on that particular post, it was just towards the end of the bushfires. And then, of course, she had to cope with coronavirus. And from time to time, she asked me a couple of questions because of the fact that I've been teaching in the area of tourism, risk, crisis and recovery for quite a while here. I have that sort of involvement, but also, too, on a much longer-term basis, I've been a member of what they call the Consular Consultative Group, which is a stakeholder group that advises the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade about travel advisories and also tourism safety and security. Those stakeholders, the majority of them are tourism organisations or tourism associations. So we have, you know, as part of that, the Australian Federation of Travel Agents, the major airlines, cruise lines, international, Council of Australian Tour Operators, Insurance Council of Australia, quite a lot of organisations who have a vested interest in tourism safety and security, and particularly, you know, accurate travel advisories. So in that area, DFAT obviously briefs that organisation because we have an interest in where travel advisories are going. And of course, when COVID arose, we went from having very nuanced advisories, travel advisories about every country in the world, to by the end of March last year, basically DFAT saying you can't travel anywhere. And that's one of the first times in 18 years we've had something of a disagreement between the tourism stakeholders in particular and DFAT. I think that DFAT, even by global standards, the complete ban of travel was extreme. I'm happy to see that they've changed their tune as far as New Zealand is concerned, and I'm hoping that they're in the future they'll become a bit more nuanced about a lot of other countries. I totally understand that part of the success of Australia in managing coronavirus has been the fact that we've actually kept travellers out and probably prevented a lot of Australians who love to travel internationally from doing so. It's been, in a sense, the story of a success. It's been, of course, pretty catastrophic for the travel industry in the meantime, but it's been an interesting involvement. And, you know, I've been researching in this area for about 20 years. So that's my story as it relates to this issue.
And as you have been sort of observing how this eventual plan has been worked out, and as you've already said, it is still quite a tentative agreement and subject to anything, really. But from your perspective, what was the main motivation here? Because obviously, I think a lot of people are asking a very valid question at the moment, that is, with the amount of work that has been put into encouraging domestic tourism in Australia, huge cuts on prices to almost every location in the country. If we're talking about helping the Australian tourism industry, and there has previously been such an emphasis upon getting domestic tourism numbers up and getting people out of their home states, do you think that the Kiwi travel bubble could actually have a detrimental effect on our domestic industry?
I don't really think so, Max. New Zealand, in a sense, has been treated by a lot of Australians as almost a domestic destination for a long time. So there are a lot of synergies that work in. Firstly, you know, Australians are a fairly big source of tourism for New Zealand, but conversely, New Zealand's a big source of tourism for Australia. A lot of those New Zealanders who come here probably more than many other nationalities tend to disperse throughout the country, which is actually quite a good thing. It still means that everybody who wants to go to Italy and and South America and North America and Southeast Asia still can't do that. So I think it's certainly in the interim period, domestic tourism, which has been really pushed very hard by Tourism Australia because they had nowhere else to push it. The problem is that the Australian government was essentially banning international visitation. So Tourism Australia's normal role is to market Australia to the rest of the world, but they haven't been able to do that for the last year, so they had to market it domestically. Now New Zealand, which is a tried and true market, it was prior to COVID our second biggest inbound market, is going to actually be a fillip. So I actually see it as being a good thing. It could mean that some of our regional destinations in Australia, which have been really doing brilliantly over the last 6 months or so, might be getting a slight decline in tourism, but it'll still be far, far greater than what they've experienced over the last 10 years.
Mm. And obviously, the tourism figures for New Zealand, I believe that, as you said, 40% of travellers, inbound travellers, and yep. I think financially, it's around about $3 billion, $2.7 billion to the economy.
Correct. That's right. I mean, it's an important part of the economy, and a large part of New Zealand's economy. I've been to New Zealand 15 times, so I feel that I know the country as well as many Australians could hope to. The whole of New Zealand is geared for tourism. It is always, apart from lamb and agricultural products, tourism is really where it's at for New Zealand, and the whole country, in a sense, is the economies of many parts, particularly in the South Island, really are hinged on tourism. So, and Aussie tourists in particular are ideal from a New Zealand point of view because they do go and see the country. They will hire a car. They'll go travelling here, there, and everywhere in New Zealand. And that's exactly the type of tourism that New Zealanders want. So we're probably an ideal market for them. When they were getting a lot of tourism from countries like China and Southeast Asia and the United States, that tourism tended to gravitate around certain gateway points. And it didn't necessarily travel as widely within New Zealand as Australian tourists did. So the same for Kiwis coming here. A lot of them will come and visit friends and relatives because many people do have family connections between the two countries. But New Zealanders travel just like Australians do. They want to see the wide open spaces, all the things that they can't get in New Zealand. It actually works out to be a very serendipitous market for both countries.
And do you see it potentially, because the last time we spoke, we were talking about airlines and particularly the effect that COVID-19 would have upon airlines. And one thing that you mentioned, I've been listening back to some of the old recordings about this topic. One thing that you mentioned is that the doors were wide open for a complete rehashing of what we consider our domestic tourism industry to be. And you thought that this would be an excellent time to spruik some of the places around Australia that could allow the industry to at least get itself back on its feet. Now that obviously we're being encouraged to go to New Zealand, do you think that there will be any change in the way that tourism in Australia is targeted? Because we don't know when we'll be able to get tourism in from China.
Well, I think you'll find that, particularly from the point of Tourism Australia, they're still going to be promoting Australia very heavily to the domestic market. That's not going to stop. They will obviously be doing their best to reopen the doors for Kiwis to come here. But the truth of the matter is, at this point of time, we have a bubble with one other country. So when you look at the population differences, there are 25 million Australians and less than about just under 5 million New Zealanders. So obviously the emphasis from a Tourism Australia perspective will still be to keep pushing the domestic travel, because we are still going to be the dominant market. Domestic Australian tourism will be the dominant market for Australian travel. Obviously, New Zealanders will be very welcome, but until we start seeing a much wider opening of international travel, it's still going to be Australia first, and yes, New Zealanders are very welcome.
And do you think that this will have an effect on potentially travel bubbles opening with other countries? Because New Zealand and Australia, we share not only geographical proximity, but culturally as well. Yes. We're very similar countries in many ways. Do you think that potentially there will be bubbles opening up with other countries, potentially in the region, the Pacific?
Yeah.
Many countries in the Pacific handle COVID-19 relatively effectively.
Very effectively, very indeed. Effective. I mean, if you look at countries like Vanuatu, which has had 3 cases, Fiji, which has had less than 50 cases altogether, I can certainly foresee an opening up of tourism between Australia and quite a number of Southwest Pacific countries. Fiji would probably be top of the list, and the reason that I say that is that the majority of Australians who visit Fiji, unlike the way they travel in New Zealand where they go here, there and everywhere, most Australians visiting Fiji tend to stay in resorts. So their exposure to the rest of the Fijian population is actually quite small. It's a very safe form of tourism that they have. That also applies to a lesser extent in Vanuatu. I think people do get around a bit more in Vanuatu than they do in Fiji. But the other bubbles which are certainly near to the horizon would be Singapore and some other, and Taiwan, interestingly enough, which has been incredibly successful in managing COVID. So, look, I think as has always been the image, and my understanding certainly in dealings with government, is that they wanted to do New Zealand first because that was the most familiar territory, I think, for Australia to handle. But I do think that we will see bubbles emerging in the Southwest Pacific. Now, some of those Southwest Pacific countries, I know Samoa, for example, and several others, are very nervous about reopening travel because they're concerned that it could bring in a lot of COVID, and COVID which they've managed quite successfully to keep out of their countries. But Fiji is definitely very keen to start travel again.
Mm. And do you think that this could potentially have an effect on Australia's sort of diplomatic mission overseas to, in many ways, repel a lot of soft power attempts by particularly China in the Pacific? If we were able to open up travel bubbles with smaller Pacific nations, could that essentially kill two birds with one stone? One, obviously, opening up another destination, some more revenue, but at the same time giving Pacific nations a little bit of a leg up at a very difficult time, and then hopefully allowing that to develop into a stronger bond.
I think all of those things are very likely. However, I think the greatest emphasis will still be on the health issues. So neither Australia or its Southwest Pacific neighbours are going to be just opening up willy-nilly to perhaps be a bulwark against China or anything like that until those countries are satisfied that tourism is not going to have a negative impact on the health of those countries. So they'll take that fairly carefully. I mean, clearly, from an economic point of view, if you take Fiji as just one example, Fiji's economy is 40% based on tourism. So you can imagine that the last year has been catastrophic economically for Fiji and naturally for economic. If it was only the economy that was driving things, tourism, the tourism between Australia and Fiji probably would have been, happening 6 months ago. But there is this nervousness. I mentioned, for example, about Taiwan having a fantastic record and being a possible place for a bubble. But then again, if you want to upset the Chinese, encouraging lots of Australians to go to Taiwan probably will just add a little bit of extra oil to the flames we already have in that relationship.
Exactly. If we were to start taking trips to Taiwan, I can imagine that that would probably end quite poorly. Do you think that there that this could potentially be one of these new sort of weapons of soft power, that, particularly in the region that we sit in, that is already incredibly popular for tourism, but also has this huge geopolitical significance at the moment?
Oh, look, tourism is very much a weapon for soft power. And I think anybody who... I used to do a lot of work on in the Middle East, related to the Middle East. I ran the Israel Government Tourist Office here in this country for 12 years. And certainly, you know, tourism was seen as an icebreaker to enhance relations between different countries that didn't necessarily like each other very much. So, you know, tourism is a great way of breaking down barriers and also breaking down stereotypes. So, you know, at its very, very best, you know, tourism is actually a facilitator for improved relations between different countries in the world. But if you, I guess, if you take it in a different way, tourism can become weaponized, I suppose, to a certain extent. If a country, and this was something that a lot of Asian, Southeast Asian countries have experienced, when your tourism market is highly dependent on one country, and certainly China was a case in point here, the withdrawal of Chinese tourism for a diplomatic reason or a political reason could actually be very dangerous. And in fact, you know, there was a nature of some of the conflict that was occurring in recent years between Japan and China was actually tourism related. The Chinese government actually at one stage reduced the number of tourists who were able to travel to certain parts of Japan because they were upset with some of the Japanese government's policies. So, yeah, I mean, look, tourism is one of many things that can be used used or misused in a diplomatic sense.
Well, what may start from April 19th as a travel bubble between New Zealand and Australia could prove to be the blueprint for an unusual new type of soft power. As Dr. Bierman makes clear, for countries in the Pacific who've kept COVID-19 at bay, the opportunity to open travel lanes again with Australia and New Zealand could shift the diplomatic balance. With tourism from China still at a halt and the Tokyo Olympics a solely domestic affair, catch it up and cabin feverish Aussies could be a very weighty currency in the region's COVID-19 recovery. Well, that's about all for this week's episode of Think Business Futures. Think Business is recorded in the studios of 2SER 107.3 FM in Sydney on Gadigal land of the Eora people. A special thank you to our broadcast partners at the University of Technology's Business School and our national broadcaster, the Community Radio Network. You can find all our previous episodes online wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, I've been your host, Max Tillman.